Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Burrow is a furniture company known for timeless design and thoughtful construction, and free shipping, and that extends to their outdoor collection. Their outdoor furniture is built to withstand the elements, featuring rust-proof stainless steel hardware, weather-ready teak, and quick-dry foam cushions. For Memorial Day, get 15% off your Burrow purchase at burrow.com/acast, and up to 25% off outdoor. That's up to 25% off outdoor furniture at burrow.com/acast.
Chase Thomas podcast. The Chase Thomas podcast. My nephew needs me to record. See, I already hate it.
All right, hello, and welcome back to a Wednesday afternoon edition of the Chase Thomas podcast. I'm still the aforementioned Chase Thomas, and I am joined by Mark Haynes of Clutch Points. Mark, good morning. Your time, sir. How are you?
Hey, I'm good. Thanks, Chase, for having me, man. I appreciate you. And yeah, good morning to you as well.
Oh, I don't know where to start because I had this whole list of things to touch on today. And when I do my outlines and I'm just reading everything, and like, I even feel like the stuff that I was perusing through this morning is already outdated. And it just, I feel like as we're recording this, we should even point out it's 12:55 East time. So apologies for anything that changes after listening to this. But, man, I think we have to start with Kawhi, because first off, this sucks. And the latest is that he has an ACL injury. We don't know to the extent from Sham Charania of The Athletic and Stadium. That's it. Like, it started off like he's just going to miss game five. And now it's like, no. This is it. This has been the trend all year. This has been the trend. This is like the biggest fear, I'm sure, within the NBA and for Adam Silver. It was just like, when you do this season, you rush it back, and when Anthony Davis talked about not getting his normal offseason of just like being pushed away for a month and not doing any basketball, not doing anything, after the bubble, and we see this, like, there are just so many injuries, and this was like the concern of just like, I don't know if we're going to be able to get through it. And now, like, we already had a quote-unquote asterisk champion last year because of the bubble nature and the lack of home field advantage and all that, but now this year, it's just like, who's going to be the healthiest is basically who's going to be the NBA champion, right?
Yeah, Chase, you're 100% right, man. I've been saying that from the beginning. As soon as it started, as soon as the schedule came out, not seeing how rushed games were going to be, I was like, it's not going to be about who's the best team and who has the best roster. It's definitely going to end up who's the healthiest at the end and healthy at the right time. And you see with the Lakers and Miami, they struggled, you know, with injuries all year, even though they both made it to the finals and this year, both eliminated in the first round, probably heavily due to injury. Of course, the Lakers, you know, getting AD hurt, that was huge. But Miami never really got to play together as well. So this is definitely a strange year. And, like, man, just even covering the season was like, even though it was my first season covering, but it was brutal. Just how many games were coming consecutively and just one night off and you back to it. And it was just, you know, this is a race to the finish line to see who's the healthiest.
This is just the nature of the sport. So it's not fair to the team that ultimately does win the title this year that, like, oh, they only won it because of injuries, because that's just you play the cards you're dealt. And the Jazz can't feel bad if they end up winning the series now with Conley looking like he's coming back. The Jazz Suns have been the healthiest, but also Chris Paul entering COVID protocols, just bonkers. But then you have Jalen Rose this morning just revealing that Paul is vaccinated and that he should miss at most one game. It's just like, it's just information is coming everywhere, and I don't even know what to do with that, but it seems like the Suns avoided catastrophe there. But it's just, we don't know what's going to happen here. And now the Sixers and the Hawks with Trey's shoulder. So that doesn't look like that's going to be improved the way he's talking about it. Like, he's just going to keep it warm. And then you have Embiid's knee, and he took 12 jumpers in the second half in that loss in game four. I'm going to guess part of the reason that he was settling for jumpers is because he's a little hobbled, and jumpers are a little bit easier than just going inside on Capella and John Collins over and over again. So I have no idea where things are going, but I do know that it's just, we have to pay so close attention to the injuries and just where we're at. And it's kind of like, I don't know what to do with this, but it just sucks because the Clippers, I think, and the Nets too, were just the most stacked rosters on both sides. Like, I picked Clippers Nets before the season, and now it's just, I have no idea. I have no idea. It seems like the Nets are in good shape. And this is also just like, I'm not even mad about the Bucks. I'm just sad.
Right.
Like, this was, they haven't been hit with the injury bug at all. Like, they got everybody. Middleton, Drew, Giannis, this whole group is healthy. It's just, they got dealt a great hand, not wishing injury, but like Harden being hobbled, Kyrie missing games. Like, it was wide open for them to finally break through and win the Eastern Conference. And now it's probably over. And I just, we saw the rash of coach firings today. I think we can probably add one more to the list, right?
Hey, it's looking bad over there in Milwaukee, because like you said, last night was, that was a game they were supposed to go out there and get. You know, they are supposed to take advantage of a hobbled James Harden, and you know, the KD was the only quote unquote superstar for that game, being that James Harden was injured. And you know, obviously Kevin Durant put on you know, amazing performance. 48 and triple double, 17 to 10.
He played 48 minutes. He had like 46 and 48 minutes. He didn't come out. Kevin Durant played the entire game.
Yeah. And insane. That's like, I loved it. And that's what you have to do in that situation. KD, he had a lot of criticism coming into this game, saying, you know, he can't lead, he can't do this. He has to go out there and win. And he went out there and did it. He put the team on his back. And as much as I want to get on the Milwaukee Bucks for that game, I really can't, simply because KD just was not going to allow that team to lose.
It was just that crazy three he had at the end was bonkers, but also just the fumbling from Middleton to Giannis and the handoff to close. Like, they were just bad. They just did dumb stuff. Milwaukee was just doing dumb stuff. And the highlight for me is James Harden calling off a double team when Giannis is backing him down. Man. That was the most disrespectful thing I have ever seen for a superstar player like that. Giannis, like, we know Giannis has nothing in his bag, but like, that's one of those where you're just like, oh my God, this is over. This is bad, right?
Yeah, nah, you're right. And like, when you look at the Milwaukee Bucks and their offense or whatever, and we go Giannis, Middleton, and Drew Holiday, those are three really good players. One, you know, very, very good player in Giannis Antetokounmpo. But like you said, they're all three of them are limited offensively. So like, when I seen the switch of, you know, Eric Bledsoe for Drew Holiday, in my mind, I thought, you know, we're swapping out basically the same guy, you know. And Drew Holiday, he shows flashes of being that, you know, that star that you need, and, you know, that great player that you need. But he finds a way to kind of just, you know, fall behind, you know, and just disappear into the game in big moments. And then Chris Middleton, he's a good number two or three option who's going to give you, you know, his 20 points that he gives you every night, but you can't expect anything really more out of him. And Giannis, it's kind of, as great as Giannis is, it's the same thing. You know exactly what you're going to get from them, and that's what makes it a little easier. I ain't going to say easier, but easier for the Nets to kind of slow down and combat what Giannis does offensively, because they know what he's going to do, just like the whole world knows what he's going to do. So if the game is close, you know, the Bucks are always in trouble when the game is close. It's, you know, who do you get a ball to? I don't think they had those answers. Then you get late turnovers like you did yesterday. I think the same thing happened a couple of games ago with Middleton and Giannis pick and roll. It's just – that's just not really something, in my opinion, that works all that great.
No, it doesn't. And they invested a lot in that. They invested a lot in Drew. They just maxed out Drew, and I mean, they maxed out Giannis, and this is just their group, and there's not really a way for them to pivot around it. When I was watching that game last night, I was like, you know who they could have really used in that kind of game to match the firepower that the Nets were throwing out? He's in the Hawks right now, and I very much appreciated him being a member of the Atlanta Hawks. It's Bogey Bogdanovic. Like, the shot making and him just being a fearless scorer, like, the way to beat the Nets was not just defending Durant. Like, people were way too in on Giannis, and Matt Moore of Harvard Paroxysm, now of the Action Network, had this good tweet about this, was just that, like, the way to go back against the Nets is to accept that KD is going to get 46. It's to make sure that you are scoring enough with your diverse cast to outscore them. Like, the goal should be to outscore them, not to limit them. Those are two very different conversations. Like, you're not going to stop the 7-foot perfect scorer in Kevin Durant. Like, he can get a shot whenever he wants. Like, that is going to happen. Your job is to not get back down by James Harden and then have him call up a double team and then just break it off the front iron. Like, that is not how you respond to KD catching fire. Like, it's just, it's unreal they blew that game. And I enjoyed friend of the pod, Nikias Duncan, who was tweeting about this last night, of just like, I don't know how you could just fumble a game that way. His sadness throughout the game was great, because it's just like one of those things where you feel bad for Giannis, and Giannis talking about the game like, this is the best player on the planet, yada yada yada. They just it seems like they've resolved to the fact that this is done, that they cannot simply outmatch Kevin Durant and this group. And I don't know, have you changed now with everything in play right now? How do you see the rest of the playoffs going, Mark?
Well, I got the Nets making it to the finals. I don't think you know, I expect them to get past Milwaukee, obviously. And I don't think the Hawks or the Sixers can do it. And I, like, with the injuries, that's gonna play a big part in that. And then out west, man, out west is, I had the Suns up until this morning. I had the Suns coming out of the West. But with this Chris Paul thing going into COVID protocol, you know, like Jalen said, it could be one game since he got vaccinated and things like that. Wouldn't be surprised, because Phoenix, simply because Phoenix is just like wide open. You know what I'm saying? They have a full arena. Nobody with masks in there and stuff or whatever. So I wouldn't be surprised if somehow he gets out there after a game. But the Golden State Warriors, you know, face this on a smaller, you know, level with Damian Lee. Damian Lee, he tested, I don't know if Chris Paul tested positive or not, but, you know, Damian Lee tested positive after getting the vaccine. And he was out for, you know, he's out for at least a month, you know, so I'm really concerned at how this Chris Paul, you know, thing is going to play out. If it is just for a game, then I'll stick with the Suns and the Nets in the finals. But if not, secondly, it would have been the Clippers, but now Kawhi is gone, so I have to say Utah. Say Utah returns to the finals.
I think the path is pretty clear for me for Suns Nets. I still think Booker and this group will survive just fine. Like, the Suns know who they are, and yes, they need Chris Paul, but, like, I don't know. Like, I think Mitchell's gonna get his, but I also just trust Devin Booker now, and I trust Aiden, I trust Bridges, I trust this group, I trust Jay Crowder. I just trust who the Suns are at this point to be able to withstand that, because, I mean, they got the Lakers with Chris Paul being hobbled. Like, that feels like a lifetime ago of Chris Paul not being able to move around his own arm. And I don't think it'll be that long. I think hopefully it's a game or two max, and I think they can survive against this Jazz team without him. And I also just think that's going to be the all-time great matchup there. Like, I'm excited if we can get Chris Paul in the finals against Kevin Durant. We get the, and just how awesome it is for Monty and that group. I just enjoy watching the Suns. Like, I enjoy teams that know exactly who they are. They play eight smart rotation guys like Campaign, Saric. Ayton knows his role now, and he's bought all the way in. And I don't know, it just works. Like, that team just makes sense, and they work. And I just want to see how that would work against Brooklyn. I mean, I think it's going to be almost impossible to beat this Brooklyn team, but you know, that's why we play. And I also can't wait for the next ill-advised James Harden tweet about his next investment opportunity the day that he's coming back from his game.
And I got James Harden. He's amazing on and off the court, man. He's a hilarious guy. But
the day that he comes back from doubtful to questionable for a hamstring injury, he tweeted about joining the board at Saks. It's the best thing ever. I think Andrew Sharp quote tweeted like, "This is the most Nets tweet of all time," and it's it's incredible. Like, they do not care. It's just like, oh, I got work tonight. Got to go play a basketball game. But yeah, the Saks is really where my head's at the moment.
You know, I think that's how it is for those guys when it comes to KD, Kyrie, and James. Like, Kyrie has been clear all year that basketball isn't number one for him right now. He's been talking about it all season long. And, you know, when you're that good, it's understandable to an extent. I know people don't want to hear that, but do we really consider our job, you know, every day number one in our life? You know, we got other things that we care about. These guys are just, you know, rich, famous athletes who we all we know for is performing. So that's all we want to hear them talk about. But back to what you said about the Suns versus the Nets. That's the matchup I want to see, because, like you said, I don't think nobody's going to beat the Nets. I got the Nets winning it all. But the Phoenix Suns, like, they're so talented. They're so young and talented and deep. They would be the team that would give the Nets the best run for their money.
Yeah.
Because I just like how they're built, especially with a healthy Chris Paul. I like how they're built. And like you said, how they play, man. They play with so much fire. They play, you know, together. You don't see, you know, bickering, arguing between each other and things like that. They know who they are. So that, just knowing, like you said, knowing who you are, is going to help you a long way in a 7-game series.
Yeah. Who do you think it's the Blazers' job? Who do you think? Is it, because it was like a couple days ago that it was Chauncey was the expected guy, and Dame Lillard came out and saying that he wanted Jason Kidd, and Jason Kidd pulling his name out, ostensibly because Dame Lillard called out his name. Like, all that was really strange. But What do you make of that job? Eric Spoelstra's name came up there a little bit because he's just from the area and enjoyed it. But like, I would be very surprised if he left the Heat culture in that position, because it seems like he's got a lifetime job there in Miami as long as he wants it. Who do you think gets it? Who do you suspect?
Man, that's a tough one, simply because whoever decides to take that job, they have to take that job knowing what they're getting themselves into, which, you know, we've seen a tweet from Damian Lillard, you know, about a couple of weeks ago, where, you know, he didn't say he wants to leave, but it kind of sounded like a farewell or whatever in that tweet or whatever. I forget the exact words he said, but it didn't look good. And you had the press conference with Neil O'Shea, who, you know, basically, you know, broke down what happened in a lot of detail. So it just looks like, you know, whatever coach takes that position, it's going to be like it could be some chemistry, you know, issues walking into that. And and that was kind of why I think Jason Kidd is kind of like, you know, yeah, I'm not interested in that job or whatever, because, you know, who knows what's going to happen next over there. I think a lot of the big name guys, stay away. But so I couldn't pick a certain person. I know it'd be really cool if Eric Spoelstra did go over there, because, you know, be kind of a homecoming. But I highly doubt Miami's letting him go. You know, he's doing an amazing job over there. And yeah, it's gonna be tough. But one thing, and then it's a plethora of female names who are coming into the picture of the coaching job. So I, you know, depending on what's going on with Damian Lillard over there in the Blazers, I think, you know, if Dame was out or whatever, and, you know, they had to get rid of Dame for whatever reason, that would definitely be a hit for the Blazers on the court and as far as selling tickets, no matter who they bring back. You know, it'll be a hit there. So I could see them bringing in potentially one of the female coaches, you know, Becky Harmon or something like that, just to kind of bring some attention over there. Because whatever team hires a female coach, you know, cameras will be there, news will be there, you know, simply because history is being made. But I don't have a candidate right now of who I actually think will take that job.
It is interesting. Chauncey came up pretty quickly. Jason Kidd has the best agent in basketball because his name already came up for the Pelicans job that mm-hmm. just opened up. Not sure who's going to get that job. Something I've thought about with coaching now, with just the amount of turnover and just talking to, even at the high school level and talking to college coaches, high school coaches, I think coaching now sucks. Like, I think it really sucks. And yeah. I don't think most coaches are happy. I mean, you read the idea, and we don't know if this is 100% accurate, but I don't know if you saw in the Athletic piece, one of the things that it highlighted in the Dallas turmoil right now is that Haralabob Vulgaris reportedly was like putting in rotations for Rick Carlisle. Like, that was something that Rick Carlisle was doing because of the direction from the front office of mixing and managing and stuff like that. We've seen that in baseball from years ago where like GMs are telling the manager who to put in and like, this is the lineup we want you to use, this, that, and the other. Like, I don't know. Like, so when we look at these coaches, I'm like, you go through it, and I think the best ones are the ones who are just like a former player now in basketball mm-hmm. who can relate to these guys, and B, just let them do things. Because the biggest yep. difference with Atlanta now is McMillan was like, yeah, Trey calls his own plays. He was talking about that this week. Is like, Trey is more comfortable now because he is able to just read and react at what the defense gives him. And they're free. Like, there's a lot more free flowing, and it's just Lloyd Pierce was more, this is what we're doing. We're running this, we're running that. And right. players get mad. Luka got mad at Carlisle calling out plays. Mm-hmm. We saw what happened when Rondo got mad about Carlisle calling out too many plays. And we know Van Gundy was very stringent in what he wanted. Yep. Defensively, and guess what? Brandon Ingram, young guy, didn't like it. Big surprise mm-hmm. that young guys did not like being told to do this, this, and this, and defense. Like, that's just tough. So right. you look at Steve Nash, you look at Monty Williams, who seems like the all-time best just player negotiator, player just guy, like mm-hmm. his relationship with Chris Paul and everything. Like, those are the coaches you go after. Ty Lue, another one. It's just he yep. relates to all these guys. And that's why I think Chauncey Billups would probably be a good coach, is because he would relate to all these guys. He'd command respect. And I don't know. I just think for the coaches that really want to get back to like that early 2000s, late 90s style, I think it's gone forever. So when I see stuff like that, like you look at Nate Bjorken in Indiana, it's like, I think part of it is just because of his style. Like, the Nick Nurses are just the unicorns where they don't relate right. at all. And they're just tactical wizards, and they come up to the G League and they're just grinders, and they mm-hmm. they make it work. Those are right. rare, I just feel right. like. Does that make sense?
No, I agree with you. Like, this league is such a, and I blame it on like AAU. It's so many sources of playing basketball leading up to the NBA that, you know, players they you have stars, you have superstars, especially with social media and stuff that are in high school, like. Prior to 2003, LeBron was like the first high school superstar. Now you got a bunch of these guys. So now when they get to the NBA, these aren't just like regular 18, 19-year-old kids. You know, these are 19-year-old kids with attitude, with a persona, with a brand already. You know, you got guys who come in with shoe contracts and mm-hmm. things like that. So the coach that's, you know, the Stan Van Gundys of the world or whatever, they don't really do good with these new up-and-coming players. You're not going to have a team full of old guys. So yeah. it's like, you know, they're kind of – it's kind of time for Stan Van Gundy to jump back behind the camera and, you know
– Where he's good. He's a really good analyst.
He's great. You know, and I can see that. And like you said, players, former players, they do well with coaches simply because they've played the game. Plus, they have the camaraderie with players and, you know, throughout the league. And they a lot of times they play with some of the players they're coaching, things like that. And then the coaches who just are players' coaches, you know, the Monty Williams and things like this. Steve Curry's a former player, but he's also a player's coach, you know. And you have like relationships go a long way nowadays in today's day of basketball. You know,
Nash
it's not
necessarily a championship in year one just because he's close with KD.
That's it. That's it. You know, KD signed off on him. You know, they was like, yeah, we want him. KD built a good relationship with him when he played for the Warriors.
Yep.
They talked about how they seen him, you know, working out with Steve Nash often. His weird warm-ups that he do, he's shooting and squatting and shooting and all that came from Steve Nash when he played for him with the Warriors.
Yep.
So it was something, they built a relationship, and it's like, I really like this guy. He's up for a coaching job. I'm going to vouch for him.
Right.
And, you know, you've seen the picture everybody got going around, you know, the world right now with Steve Nash is hugging KD, and that hug is well-deserved because, you know, no disrespect to Steve Nash or anybody, but I could have been the coach of KD right there, and I would have been hugging him the same way because I didn't have to coach. KD went out there and did his thing, and it makes me look good. So but you know, I no disrespect to Steve Nash. I'm sure he knows a lot more about basketball than me, but that's what that moment was. It was like, man, you are the best player on the planet right now. And I appreciate you going out there and doing your thing. Because if the Nets went down last night 3-2, then we would be talking about a different, you know, team coming out the East. Yeah. I say.
I don't disagree. And it's just we just see it. We just overvalue it now. And it's just like recruiting. Being a Tennessee guy and just seeing how recruiting's changed and talk to coaches and ADs about that. If just that, like, the fifth most important thing to recruits now is winning. Like, they don't know. The reason Alabama is winning national titles is not because Derrick Henry and Tua Tagovailoa and Jalen Waddle are trying to win college championships. They don't give a shit. Like, they are there because you are preparing them for the NFL draft. Like, that is why they are there, because they see Alabama, 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 Clemson, Ohio State in the first round. Mm-hmm. Like, that is what they see. It's like, I want to get in the first round and make this my career. Like, this is my job prep. And I think if you don't have that mindset as a modern coach of, like, you have to look at your guys as, like, they are there, or they look at you as the person who is going to help them get paid and get to that next contract. And if you are not helping them get to that next contract, or they don't believe that you care about that, if you're just going, we want to win a title, you're not going to get through to these guys. The Nets don't care. Like, I really don't think the Nets care about winning a title. They're just playing basketball. They're making a lot of money. They're having fun. I think KD, Kyrie, Steve Nash, and James Harden just enjoy each other's company. And DeAndre Jordan, that's why they brought him in and paid him. He was like, you want me? You got to bring in my friend. Like, that is their whole thing. They want a happy business environment. It is not like we are Mighty Ducksing this situation and we're just all in for the team and we do it for the love of the game. And I'm not saying that's wrong. And I want to make that clear. It's like, I'm not saying any of this is wrong. It's just how it's changed and how it's evolved. It's like, it's a business, and it's more of a business than I think it's ever been.
Yeah, for sure. And like you said, who wouldn't want to go to work every day with guys you like, you know, and they're doing it right now, and they're having success with it because their talent levels are so high that this is actually probably going to work. Yep. They're probably going to win a championship together. And I'm sure when KD wins, I'm sure he'll say this was his fun. KD and Kyrie, I'm sure they'll say this was the funnest year of their career. Because, they go live with each other, how they have their weird, you know, Kyrie and KD conversations and things like that. And, you know, James Harden had a relationship with KD already. So Steve Nash, like, this just looks like a really, really fun group. Like, everybody enjoys each other over there, as weird as they are, because they're all very strange people. But, you know, they enjoy each other. And so if you could go into a happy, you know, work environment or whatever, like, it's if you want to win the championship, but if you didn't, it's like, yo, we had a good time. We'll try again next year. And I think that's been the attitude for them, and it's going to work. You know, as much as, you know, as much as people don't want it to work, you know, this team is just too talented. You know, outside of the big three with Joe Harris and the pickup of Mike James from an overseas guy who can act, he's really good. He can play. Like this Jeff Green, he balled out yesterday. Mm-hmm. Like,
oh, another guy that they're close to. Another guy that they all like.
Exactly. Jeff Green, yeah, another guy. Man, so this is like, man, this is like a dream team, you know, in itself or whatever. Not as far as like they're the top players of the NBA right now, but just like they're, it's a bunch of good players. I feel like I've been disrespecting the guy because I haven't mentioned Blake Griffin,
yeah,
who all of a sudden could dunk again. Mm-hmm. But yeah, this is just like, man, this team, they, LaMarcus Aldridge, he'll get a ring, even though he's, you know, not with the team right now. So this was just a fun and unfair. I'll say that. I go on with him saying this is unfair. But it looked like they're having a good time, and the Brooklyn Nets are going to get a championship this year.
Yeah. The All-NBA teams also came out this week, mm-hmm, for second and third. Some people lost money. Shout out to Jason Tatum and Spida, unfortunately, for... Did they lose $33 million individually for not making any of the teams? I think I saw that. Like, that's got to be brutal to just wake up and check your phone and be like, sorry, honey, didn't get that extra 33. Get that $33 million. They didn't think I was worthy. That's got to be a tough conversation. But I also just don't know what the case is to have Bradley Beal on a team over Donovan Mitchell. I think people overthink Bradley Beal a lot more. Like, would you ever consider starting your team with current Donovan Mitchell versus current Bradley Beal? Like, is it even close for you? Because for me, it's like, it's not even close. Like, Devin Booker is ahead of Bradley Beal. I don't know. Maybe I'm missing something with the Beal experience.
I'm a big Bradley Beal guy.
Okay.
So I'm a bad Bradley Beal guy. I hear what you say. I get your point. And when it comes to, you know, success, Bradley Beal has not had it. You know, he's been a guy that's been, you know, what you could say, padding the stat sheet. But I look at, you know, when I look at the Wizards, I look at, you know, what they had. And, you know, Russell Westbrook, yeah, it is Russell Westbrook, which he's a similar player as Beal. Like, his numbers hasn't equated to wins. Donovan Mitchell is just being... He's been overlooked. He's been overlooked by me. He's been overlooked by, you know, tons of media members. And it's starting to shine simply because he's on the big stage right now. And he's, them are three good names to compare with Bill, in my opinion, Bill, Booker, Mitchell. And I have them all, like, right there with each other. But I would have to go, if I'm starting a team, I would have to go Mitchell and Booker because of the youth. You know, they're younger than Beal. Not that Beal's old.
They're just more complete players. Like, I think that there is more on both ends that you can get out of those two than you can Bradley Beal. I think Bradley Beal is a number two for... Like, Bradley Beal next to Giannis makes a lot of sense to me as the mm-hmm. The other guy. But I think Booker and Mitchell can actually be the number one in a championship team. I just don't think Beal can.
I feel like Booker has the potential. I don't feel that about Donovan. I think he's great. I think at times he relies too much on a jump shot for me, because he's amazing when he's mixing it up. He's amazing, but he can't get comfortable. Just like my favorite guy, you know, one of my favorite players was Tracy McGrady.
Oh, I love T-Mac. Yeah.
Yeah, he was my dude. But when he got to Houston, obviously injuries played a part in it. But he was like, you know, KD, where he could just rise up and shoot over anybody. And I felt like, and I think I said in the interview where he said that, he knew that. So he started just doing it because that was the easy thing to do. Go to the basket, get bumped around, you know, get to the free throw line. That takes a lot on your body. But it's a lot easier to shoot jump shots. And Tracy McGrady, as great as he was, he could have, in my opinion, he could have been better.
Yeah,
that's he could have been better if he would have, continued to go towards the basket and things like that.
I think McGrady's upside was way higher. Pete McGrady, I would still take, not even close over Bradley Beal. And I like Bradley Beal a lot. I think Bradley Beal is just, it just depends on like what his role is. Like, I think it's just like with my stuff with Beal is strictly a role situation. It's like, where do you maximize Bradley Beal? And I think you maximize Bradley Beal as the number two for a limited number one option offensively, right? Like the Giannis type. I think he is the perfect compliment. Honestly, the other compliment I think would actually be perfect for him is Luka. Like if you just had that two-headed dragon in Dallas, I think that would be something to monitor, and I think that's something that would just run ravage over the Western Conference for several years. I don't know how you stop the firepower of Luka and Bradley Beal in late game situations. Like that's just pick your poison. And I think that's also just what a lot of the smart teams around the league are doing, is just like, just beef up your backcourt as much as humanly possible because they have the ball in their hands more. I mean, we just saw with the Blazers, we obviously seen with the team you cover with the Warriors, the Wizards tried it with Wall and Beal, and they tried it again with Westbrook and Beal. I just think Chris Paul and James Harden, Chris Paul and Devin Booker, Donovan Mitchell and Mike Conley. Like, you just go up and down the list. The smartest teams are the ones that understand that, like, you put all your resources into the guys who are bringing the ball up the most. And that can be the point forward, that can be your lead backcourt, but you need two guys in the backcourt at the very minimum who are above average offensive guys to stand a chance. And I think something like that would be cool. I don't know. Do you think, to bring it all full circle with the Blazers too, because I'm fascinated by their offseason more than other teams, I think, just because they have a lot of interesting pieces to move. I don't think Dame's moving, but I also would just be very interested to see what CJ McCollum's trade value is and like what teams around the league actually see him as, because I don't know who the right fit is, but like he's not flipping any title chances. He's not flipping any team's fortunes. Like I don't really know where he's supposed to go that's really going to make all that much of a difference, right?
Yeah, same. And I think it'll be the same in return. I think you're going to get somebody, you know, the caliber of a CJ McCollum, you know, CJ. And I don't think Dame leaves personally, but like when it's talking about coaches coming, they have to consider that because it is a small possibility. But I think the move is to try to figure out, you know, what to do with CJ McCollum. Because also they have, with CJ, you had the odd interview with Yusuf Nurkic.
Yeah.
It sounds like he's out. You know, and that's a major piece. And the Blazers have, like, it's so, like, they've been good. They've been a solid team the last, you know, 8 years or so. And I think they just peaked right there. I think they're peaked. I don't see them getting better. I don't see them making a move that is like, oh, you know, they're going to be contenders next year. I know, you know, Dame has to not be happy with that because I believe he wants to win a championship. And you know, the time is ticking on him. But the CJ move, I think you have to at least, you know, put him out there and, like you say, figure out what his trade value is because, you know, it's like you said, it's not a team out there that's going to be like, oh, we need CJ McCollum. You know, no disrespect to him. He can play, you know, he can score, but he's shown that he's really like one-dimensional. You know, he's a guy, you give him the ball, score. He's not necessarily a great playmaker from what we've seen, but maybe on another team, maybe he shows he can. Maybe he shows us he's actually better than what he is, but Dame has been leading the show. So it'll have to be a team that'll just, you know, that'll take a, you know, take a chance on him. I can see, like, you know, I think we was talking about Bill. I think Bill would do good with Dame. Pair with Dame, like we talked about the backcourt guys. You know, Dame would be the number one option, but you have Bill who can go out and he could create, he could get his own shot. You know, that would be, in my opinion, an upgrade. But at the same time, the Wizards would be doing the Blazers a favor.
Well, you'd have to take Nurkic and some picks. I don't even know. Like, I guess Anthony Simons is going with that. Like, you're gonna have to give up.
And even with that, I think you still. You know, you lose. So it just depends on what what teams want to do, you know, going to, if they're looking into the future. Because when I look at, you know, that Blazer roster or whatever, I see a lot of decent players with a lot of limitations. So it's, and that's basically what, like, when we seen the Blazers get bounced, you know, this year, you know, that's what you're seeing. You know, Dame had that 55-point game, and you couldn't really get anything else out of anybody else. And because they're, you know, you got 3-and-D guys, you got CJ, who's a scorer, but he has to have the ball to score. So that means you're taking the ball out of Dame hands, who's your only playmaker. Yusuf Nurkic is a beast on the glass and in the post that slows down the game, hurts Dame a little bit if you slow him down the game. Plus, he's a liability on defense. So, you know, you got a lot of Anthony Simons. We don't know exactly what he is yet. You know, he's still developing. You can look at the future film. So it really just going to depend on, like, what a team is looking for anybody to make a move over there.
Yeah. Last thing, and we'll wrap up on this two-parter. First, how do you think Atlanta Philly plays out tonight? Do you think Atlanta steals game 5, or do you think Embiid bounces back and draws a bunch of fouls and Atlanta just has no solution to Embiid just being inside and doing whatever he wants?
Yeah, that's what I think happened. I think Philly takes this one. I think this series, let's see, what Philly's down, right?
Oh, it's 2-2. It's 2-2. Yeah.
I think the series go to 7. I think Philly comes out of, you know, Joel Embiid, he usually comes when he's criticized or whatever, he usually plays with a chip on the shoulder the next game, and I could see a big game from Joel Embiid. But if for whatever reason, you know, if he's really that hobbled, he's really hurt, and we see the same type of output that we got in the second half of last game, and this series is for the Hawks. You know, once again, I think who wins this game 5, I think they take the series, even though, you know, obviously that's what statistics usually say. But I don't see either one of these teams being good enough and healthy enough to come back and win 2 games, you know, to win the series. But I do have this series going to 7, though.
Interesting. Last thing. What do you think happens with Golden State this offseason? What do you think their offseason is? Do you think they just bet on Klay being back, then they're back into contention? Do you think Wiseman will be good enough next year to make a big impact? What do you make of Golden State's offseason plans? What would you guess? Do you see a major move in the cards?
I don't see a major move. If something pops up to where a team really wants, you know, Wiseman, it's a team that has a, you know, a veteran that, you know, they want to put out there to try to get a championship and they want to rebuild. The Warriors have came out and said that Wiseman, he won't be traded. You know, they plan on keeping him, but, you know, you can't always trust, you know, what the owners or coaches or anybody saying. They go, at the end of the day, they go do what's best for business. And but I think for the majority, they keep the roster the same, simply because I think if they were healthy this year, I think the Golden State Warriors are still playing right now. Well, with the injuries that's happened, I would say the Golden State Warriors are coming out the West if they were healthy, because what happened with James Wiseman was really unfair. You know, he's a kid that he didn't really get to play college ball. No training camp. So he's like, you know, he's in and out from injuries to COVID, you know, violations and things like that. So he's almost 2 years out from the last time he played, like since he was like 17 years old. Then you throw him on this team where you think you got Steph, Clay, Andrew Wiggins, Draymond, and then he'll be the center. And if you have all those guys, he can kind of just blend in and do the things that he does well on a regular basis. He, you know, he's athletic. He can rebound. He should be able to rebound because he's athletic and tall and, you know, fast and things like that. But once Clay went down, Warriors needed more scoring. And the only person that they could look at for more scoring was James Wiseman. But now you're asking a 19-year-old kid to come out there and be the, you know, second or third leading scorer on the team, which, you know, he clearly wasn't ready for that role. But with the fully healthy Golden State Warriors team, I think he'll look 10 times better than what we've seen from him last year, because he's able to be comfortable and, like I said, do the things that he does well already and continue in the process, get better with all the things that he struggles with, you know, and timing and things like that. Because Clay, man, Clay, the biggest, I expect Clay to come back to like all-star form, because he's one of those guys, like, he's not a dribbler. He's not a, you know, a real shifty guy. But he could score, which he has. He could score 50 without dribbling the ball. And his shot isn't going anywhere. He going to come back with that same stroke. You seen the video of him shooting from the corner with his boot on, barely even not jumping at all. It's just shooting. And I think he hit like 13, 14 threes straight. Like, the shot is never going to leave. So when you have the threat of Klay Thompson, who's arguably the second greatest shooter of all time, paired with the greatest shooter of all time, and then you have an in-shape Draymond Green, he's back to, you know, his tip-top form. I think they stay put, to answer your question, I think they stay put for the most part. And I think next year the Golden State Warriors are a very, very dangerous team.
Okay. I hope so. I miss Steph playing in meaningful basketball games. It was a delight to watch him this year. I need him back. And just Clay. We just need Clay Thompson back in our lives. We need happy Draymond, happy Clay, happy Steph. It's just a fun thing.
Yeah.
Mark, what can we check out from you at Clutch Points or anywhere else this week?
Clutch Points, sometime this summer I'll have my year one YouTube show coming back with where I'm talking to professional athletes about their first year in the league, whether it's NBA players or NFL. You can look out for that. I'm in the writing now, so I'll have some feature stories throughout the summer from some Warrior players. So you can still follow me for Warriors content along with other, you know, NBA teams and things like that. I still got my Minute Till Six podcast with my co-host Chris Perry. And, you know, I'll probably ask some more things by the next time you see me. I'm always staying busy. So, you know, hey, I appreciate you for having me on your platform, letting me talk with you, and, you know, hopefully you have me again.
All right. Absolutely. Mark, thank you so much for making the time. You stay safe out there, and we'll talk again soon.
Thank you.
Nicely done, nephew. Chase Thomas Podcast. Hell yeah.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
Planning for your next trip? Elevate your travel style with Quince. Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/trip for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Hi, this is Craig Robinson from Ways to Win, and support for this podcast comes from Invesco QQQ, the official ETF of the NCAA. Invesco QQQ is proud to sponsor this episode, and even prouder to provide access to innovation for the last 25 years. Basketball has had innovations over the years, too. We're seeing the game played in new ways every day. Learn more at Invesco.com/QQQ. Let's rethink possibility. Invesco Distributors, Inc.